From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call. Stay with Dr. Barry Dworkin for the next 2 hours, and we guarantee you'll go away learning at least one new thing to keep you on the road to better health. Here's your host, Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to the September 16th, 2007 edition of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. I'm broadcasting live on 1070 CFAX in Victoria, 1290 CFRW in Winnipeg, AM 800, CKLW in Windsor, 1050 Chum in Toronto, and from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about a new technique that is being used to destroy early stage small kidney tumors without having to go and do extensive surgery to get to the tumor to destroy it. The technique is called cryoablation, and we'll be speaking to Dr. Lewis Hinshaw in a few moments, who is an assistant professor of radiology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about those patients that qualify for those type of for that type of surgery and some background as to how it came about. Also, we're going to talk about the development of artificial blood vessels using muscle-derived stem cells that tend to not clot up when used to replace other arteries that have been damaged, for example, arteries in the legs from peripheral arterial disease. And this is Dr. David Vorpe, who will be joining us. He's an associate professor of surgery and bioengineering and director of the Center for Vascular Remodeling at University of Pittsburgh. He'll be talking about the whole process of how they came about developing these blood vessels, how they are working, and what's in store with regards to human health and replacing these particular tissues. And as always, your calls in our second hour at 1-800-580-2372 and emails at sundayhousecall.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in our second hour. A study presented in early March at the Society of Interventional Radiology meeting held in Seattle asked a straightforward question. For small tumors of the kidney detected at an early stage, what method works just as well or better at eliminating them? What patient would be best suited for such a procedure? Dr. Louis Hinshaw, assistant professor of radiology in the abdominal division of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, joins us today to talk about this issue. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How common are cancers of the kidney, and how are they commonly diagnosed?
Cancers of the kidney are very common. They're in the United States, which is where I know the data, there's about 30,000 diagnosed every year. They're actually most frequently diagnosed as an incidental finding on imaging done for other purposes. For example, if you had a motor vehicle accident and you went to the hospital and had a CT scan, they often see these small renal masses, which are small renal cancers. Unfortunately, that's become relatively common. Mm-hmm. So the good news is we find them earlier than we used to. They used to only present to the physician when you had blood in your urine or something like that, or other symptoms. And so now they present much smaller than they used to, but then it brings up this question of how to handle them, what to do with them when you find them.
And that's sort of my follow-up question is, what is the standard of care today when dealing with small renal cell tumors?
Okay. So the standard of care in most institutions would be considered a partial nephrectomy, which is where you go in surgically, either laparoscopically or with open surgery, and resect the tumor along with a small margin, usually about a centimeter of normal kidney tissue around it. And, you know, initially they used to take the whole kidney whenever they did this, but now they've done the studies to prove that the partial nephrectomy or local control, taking care of the tumor locally, is just as effective as taking the entire kidney, and it's obviously much less traumatic to the body. So that's the standard of care in most institutions mm-hmm. at this point.
What are sort of the potential complications of this particular procedure, the partial nephrectomy?
The complications are pretty significant, actually, and there's a lot of morbidity associated as well. So it's a big surgery with a lot of large incisions if they do it open, and a lot of portholes if they do it with laparoscopically. And there's a significant risk for bleeding. You have a significant risk that you will have a decrease in your renal function, so your kidney function and how well they work. And there is a significant risk of having other complications as well, such as injury to the colon or bowel that's next to the kidney or other structures in the area.
Now, in comparison to the partial nephrectomy, you were looking at other procedures to try to accomplish essentially the same thing. And I wanted to ask you, what was your working hypothesis for the study that you conducted?
Well, at our institution, we've kind of taken this partial nephrectomy and we've said, well, and other people have done this before as well. We're not the only one, certainly. But we said, well, you know, if you can control the cancer by resecting the tumor, if you destroy the tumor in place, you should have the same efficacy or the same result. And so, we do cryoablation to a large percentage of the small renal tumors that we have at our institution. Now, initially, you could only perform cryoablation with a surgical technique because the probes that we use were actually quite large. They were too large to put in through the skin and position in the kidney. But as the technology has improved over time, the probes have become significantly smaller, and now we can put them in through the skin percutaneously in a similar fashion to the surgical technique and freeze the tumor. And when you freeze it, you destroy the cells and kill the tumor. And so our study looked at our earlier data with laparoscopic technique as compared with our more recent work with percutaneous or through the skin technique, in trying to figure out if, in fact, there were advantages to the percutaneous technique, understanding that not every patient would be eligible for this procedure.
And how is the procedure done? Just in terms of when you mentioned laparoscopic, the thought is, okay, they insert a probe or a rod through the abdominal cavity to get to look at the kidney itself and the area of that kidney. And percutaneous, meaning through the skin, isn't that sort of the same thing? Or what is the technical difference between the two?
The technical difference is that the laparoscopic technique is a surgical procedure where there are incisions made, there are large ports positioned, and they insufflate the abdomen, or sometimes they go through the retroperitoneum. And then, interestingly enough, the guidance is done with laparoscopic ultrasound, and the cryoprobe is actually placed in a similar fashion to the percutaneous technique, in other words, through the skin. So the main difference is the invasiveness of the procedure. So with the percutaneous technique, we don't have to do the surgical procedure. We don't have to open the abdomen with these ports. And as a result, the associated recovery time, the morbidity, and in fact, as we proved in our study, the hospital costs and the charges associated with the procedure are much less.
And if we turn to your study, how did you design it, and what was the inclusion-exclusion criteria for the subjects that you looked at?
We designed it as a retrospective review of our experience. It was there was no prospective nature to it. And the inclusion criteria were just any patient that underwent this procedure at our institution. The only exclusion criteria that we had were for patients who were treated for more than one tumor at one time, understanding that this would alter the charges significantly, and we didn't want to introduce that bias.
What were the results that you saw?
So the results that we saw was that in appropriately selected patients, there was a significant decrease in the costs associated with the percutaneous technique as compared with the laparoscopic technique. Depending on how you want to define it, there was the laparoscopic technique cost about 59% more than the percutaneous technique. We also saw a much shorter hospital stay with the percutaneous technique. The average hospital stay was approximately 1 day. Whereas with the laparoscopic technique, it was about 2.5 days. And we also saw equal efficacy. In other words, there was equal results in the two groups. They both had approximately the same recurrence rate, which was around 10% for both groups. And we also saw a lower not significantly so, rate of complications in the percutaneous group as compared with the laparoscopic group.
How was this information received at the interventional radiology meeting?
Well, I think it was received with some excitement because, I think there's a lot of kind of anecdotal evidence to suggest that this is true in the past, but nobody's ever taken the time to sit down and prove it. Since we have a relatively large experience, we were able to do so in a kind of a discrete and defined way, which for us as radiologists mm-hmm. is exciting because we like to think that we can offer less invasive and yet just as efficacious procedures that are good for the patients.
Now, with regards to this particular technique, what subset of people would this technique be indicated for? That is, at what stage of renal cell carcinoma would be candidates for this treatment?
Sure. So it turns out that from previous studies done and previous literature that it's pretty apparent that for tumors greater than 5 centimeters in diameter, ablation probably is not the appropriate treatment. So the tumors have to be less than 5 centimeters in diameter. It also is somewhat problematic if the tumors are in the center of the kidney where the large blood vessels and the collecting system, or ureter and renal pelvis, are, because if you injure the renal pelvis and the ureter, you can cause problems with kidney function.
Right.
So as far as choosing between laparoscopic and percutaneous, we still do laparoscopic procedures at our institution, and that's even though the percutaneous we've kind of proven is better for some patients. But the problem is some of the tumors, especially when they're anterior on the kidney or on the front of the kidney, can be problematic from a percutaneous approach. And so when you do the laparoscopic technique, you can move the colon, which might be lying on the top of the kidney, and you can get better access to these tumors. So the location on the kidney is somewhat critical to deciding whether or not it's possible to do a percutaneous procedure on a patient.
Is this procedure in general in the United States to be added as a standard of care, just as the laparoscopic version is?
I think that over time it will be. The problem with the literature that we have to this date is it's very short-term follow-up. So in other words, in our study, our follow-up averaged 11 months for the percutaneous procedures and 14 months for the laparoscopic procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because it's a new and developing emerging technology, and so we don't have these long-term results. Most of the time, in order to become standard of care, a procedure or has to have long-term results, proving efficacy at least out to 5 years and usually out to 10. So I think it's over time this will become the standard of care, but I think that at this point in time it's too early to say for sure.
Are these long-term follow-ups part of your plan to follow the efficacy of these particular procedures?
Oh, definitely. I'm relatively young in my career, and hopefully in 10 or 20 years from now I will have the long-term data obviously then, and we can make decisions on with a little bit more information.
Well, Dr. Hinshaw, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss this relatively new procedure and the comparisons with what's considered to be standard of care today, and obviously very helpful for patients and physicians alike in terms of being able to provide that type of care at reducing morbidity and cost and reducing recovery times.
Yep. No problem. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All the best.
Thank you.
Dr. Lewis Hinshaw is Assistant Professor of Radiology in the Abdominal Division of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Coming up, muscle-derived stem cells to create artificial blood vessels to replace those blocked ones in your legs. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday.